This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Bite-sized business breakfast, best bits from The Biz Breakfast, Tuesday, March the 2nd. Coming up, Aetna Trainer talks all things oil and, of course, energy, with some big meetings just around the corner. What will those meetings mean for you, me and others here in the region? We'll also be looking at those S&P population figures for the region, with a seemingly significant drop in population here in the UAE. What does that mean? We've been talking to the team at EMBD, getting their thoughts on that one. We spoke all things aviation. Big interview earlier on today with Adel Al-Reda of Emirates Airline. They've got a couple of initiatives. They've got people talking at present. Obviously, the vaccine passport rollout, or the potential of a vaccine passport rollout. And also this news yesterday that you can buy a seat next to you if you want to ensure more space on a flight. Just two stories that we addressed with Adel Al-Reda in our conversation. Plus, we had Serena Kelly in talking all things COVID, vaccines and otherwise in our very regular and very popular Ask Serena segment.
Ask Serena.
Morning, Special K.
Oh, morning, guys.
We're going to hear from the guys at the World Health Organization in a second. Big press conference overnight. First up, very quickly, give us the numbers, Serena. Give us the number of cases.
So over the last few days, you've had figures of 3,434 new cases, 2,930 yesterday. They announced 2,526 new cases of COVID-19 in the country. So that's after more than 175,000 tests were conducted. Yes, it is a massive drop from that huge figure the day before, more than 226,000. So looking at all the figures that you need, currently your recoveries has been dropping again. We're at 1,107 recoveries yesterday. So total recoveries, 382,332. 17 fatalities yesterday, so at 1,238. And then your active cases has gone up, 10,480.
Right then, let's talk about the World Health Organization. Press conference last night. They do them on Mondays and twice a week, don't they?
I think, yeah, I do believe it's twice a week. So it comes up as a reminder in my Twitter feed. I'm like, okay, going to put that on while I'm cooking.
But Monday night is World Health Organization night, isn't it?
Yes. So they had their press briefing last night. We heard from Director General, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus. He announced Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire started their vaccination campaigns yesterday, the first countries to do so through the COVAX initiative, which the UAE has been supporting. We had we saw Emirates Airline, their plane had delivered the first batch of vaccines to Ghana. So between now and the end of May, 237 million doses of vaccines will be allocated to 142 participating economies through COVAX. Their aim, seeing vaccination start in every country within the first 100 days of this year. There are now 40 days left of the 100 days. He also issued a stark reminder to all governments and people that vaccines alone will not keep you safe. He also spoke on the latest developments with COVID-19, and there's been an increase.
In the past week, the number of reported cases of COVID-19 increased for the first time in 7 weeks. Reported cases increased in four of WHO's six regions: the Americas, Europe, Southeast Asia, and the Eastern Mediterranean. This is disappointing, but not surprising. We're working to better understand these increases in transmission.
So he went on to explain some of the reasons for the increase. Some of it appears to be due to relaxing of public health measures, continued circulation of variants, and people letting down their guard. But this was his advice.
Vaccines will help to save lives. But if countries rely solely on vaccines, they are making a mistake. Basic public health measures remain the foundation of the response. For public health authorities, that means testing, contact tracing, isolation, supported quarantine, and quality care. For individuals, it means avoiding crowds, physical distancing, hand hygiene, masks and ventilation.
Again, it's just reiterating those measures that the UAE government's also trying to express constantly, you know, and also encouraging people to report any violations you might see. But just, you know, you're walking out the door, have your mask on and just keep that physical distance.
Yeah, and we're doing it here in the office, aren't we? I mean, when we have a short break in the studio, we maybe go out and get a cup of coffee. In the studio, we're not wearing masks, but literally as soon as we walk out that door, we all put one on. We've all been double dose vaccinated here, but that doesn't mean you can let your guard down, does it?
And I think the other thing is just making those smart decisions. Like for us, we've got, this is our bubble. This is our safety bubble. We're all kind of, I think if you keep your social circles small and you, the people that you're actually hanging out with, if as long as they're doing the same thing and only hanging out with you, then you're keeping that bubble closed and you're creating that safety net, so to speak. But the WHO, the World Health Organization, has thanked the UAE as well.
Okay, what have we done?
Well,
we collective pronoun.
Yeah, I know, it's like, thanks. So it was basically...
I've done nothing.
Yes, you have, Richard. For their help in providing essential and life-saving health services to those in need in Yemen. So it was a tweet. They thanked the UAE and other partners and donors such as Kuwait, Japan, the UN Central Emergency Response Fund, and just urge donors to scale up their support and to continue helping the millions of Yemenis. But the UAE has been helping UNICEF. They've been helping with the COVAX initiative, getting vaccines delivered to nations in need, like we were just saying. And Sudan is the latest country to receive aid, following the directives of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President and Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai. Two planes delivered 54 tons of aid and support, and that was Sunday and yesterday.
Good stuff. Very quickly, two more questions for you. First of all, inspections. What's the deal?
So we've got figures from Dubai Economy. Last month, February, a total of 10 establishments were shut down for flouting COVID-19 safety measures. 246 outlets were fined and 93 entities received warnings for not complying with the rules. So just sharing those figures, it just goes to show the constant stepping up of inspections and that they're taking things seriously. And, you know, people are getting fined and receiving warnings, or in this case, also getting shut down. But again, also the same message, people can report any violations through the Dubai Consumer app as well.
And finally, there is a scam that we're being warned about.
Yeah. So Dubai Police, they're urging the public to watch out for online scammers posing as, this time, recruitment agents for domestic workers. So the reminder comes after it was Al-Rashidiyah Police Station. They received 14 reports about fraudsters targeting people looking for domestic helpers during the COVID-19 pandemic. So the scammers who took advantage of the restrictions during the pandemic, they would charge anywhere between 9,000 to 13,000 dirhams, claiming it was recruitment and administrative fees. What did they scam? A total of more than 87,000 dirhams since the pandemic began until February of this year. It's so sad. But they claimed that they could bring domestic helpers into the country despite those shutdowns of, you know, various airports across the globe. So a special task force that was set up arrested the suspects. It's just, again, just trying to be careful of the things that that you're being approached with.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
You're listening to The Business Breakfast, Dubai Eye 103.8. Up next, we're talking about chairs. Don't sit down, Brandy.
It's the vibes you give off, don't you? You absolutely do. When you've got a spare seat next to you, you've lucked out. Maybe you are the one in a row of three, which is what you're after. But Emirates is going to start selling, or has started selling, those spare seats. And we are going to be speaking to Adil Alreda, who is the COO of Emirates, about that in just a few moments' time. They're also offering discounts of up to 60% off excess baggage. Obviously, Emirates has seats. It has a hold. If they're not full, it's trying to monetize them. That's easy to see. We can see what's going on there. How do we feel about it? That is the question, because my WhatsApp was going absolutely mental yesterday, pinging with people who were all for it and others who sort of said, hang on, we're supposed to be socially distancing anyway, so shouldn't those seats be kept spare?
You see, I've already crossed this Rubicon, because I quite often buy, if I'm in economy class on Emirates, I buy the extra legroom seat, or the bulkhead seat, which is 350 dirhams. I did it last week on my way back from Mali. It's a 4-hour flight. It's not worth paying squillions for business class. But yeah, I'll chip in a few hundred dirhams to have a slightly comfier seat, whether that's legroom or having a bit of space next to you. I kind of get that. Etihad's been doing it for a while, haven't they?
Yeah, and a lot of airlines have. So it's not new, but the timing is interesting. Also, people yesterday trying to figure out the break-even for an Emirates seat if it's between 200 and 600 dirhams, which is what you'd be paying for the spare, depending on the sector. You can't book it in advance, though. You can only book it at the check-in.
Adel Alreda of Emirates on the line up next.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we are having a look at a couple of our big stories of this morning and of the week. Emirates has tied up with the Dubai Health Authority to create a digital version of travellers' COVID-19 medical records, their testing history, infection history and vaccination records. We are very pleased to be joined by Adel Alreda, now the COO of Emirates Airline. Adel, good morning. It's lovely to speak to you again.
Good morning to you, Ashutoku.
Tell me, how is this new system going to work?
See, we're trying to establish a link between the Emirates systems, whether it is reservation, check-in systems, and various systems in the company, with the Dubai Health Authority systems, and which will provide automatically any data related to COVID-19 testing to our system. So the passenger won't have to carry any documentation. It will be faster, it will be more accurate, and it will be reliable from a reliable sources. So the person goes to any of the labs, the clinics, he does the test, and then the information transmitted to his booking reference, and the thing will be available on the systems. So when he check in, all that data available. Now this is stage number one.
Okay, what's beyond stage number one?
Beyond that, we're trying to link it with other applications, i.e. it could be with IATA, PATH, and other governments or other countries, where the information will be also available to the other end. So the person, you know, before he arrives in there, all his data related to COVID-19 will be available to them.
Okay, which is interesting, because you're about to start trialing the IATA testing and vaccination passport in April. Are you saying that this local system could work in with that?
It will complement that, obviously, because the IATA pass, it does offer much more other features, such as the entry data criteria or information to that country. So the two will could work hand in hand and provide a complete information about the passenger, as well information to the passenger.
You're doing this with the DHA. Will it only be Dubai test results and Dubai vaccination history that's included, or will it include other Emirates?
The idea in there, obviously, to expand it to other Emirates. DHA will be working with the Ministry of Health to try to link it to all the labs in UAE. So, as I said, this is a very first step, and it will enroll to other states or other Emirates in the United Arab Emirates.
And you're including infection history if someone has had COVID and therefore presumably has antibodies, and vaccination records as well. Is this the first step towards a local vaccination passport, Adel?
This is, as I said, at this time it will be limited to the test related, but you know, eventually it's going to be linked to many other things. Can be linked to his vaccination information that will, I think, eventually be required by many countries. So as long as the passenger or the individual is give consent of this transmitting the data, and what, because we need to keep an eye of the privacy of certain medical records. So I think there where we have to work it out exactly what can be available to the airline and what is the privacy information for the passengers.
You mentioned there that it could become mandatory. Do you think that being vaccinated will become mandatory to hop on an Emirates plane? Can you see that day?
I think it's not the Emirates, we are the airline, but I think many countries have already established that if you are vaccinated, you would be, or you've taken the second vaccination, you will be allowed to enter to that country without having to quarantine or without having to do any PCR testing. So I think a few countries is going to start providing privileges or easing the requirement for those who have taken the vaccinations.
What about here, Edel? Is this a conversation you're having with authorities here?
But definitely, this is one of the items being discussed, because we need to give advantage for the people who's vaccinated. This is a very early stage now. I think once more countries and more people get vaccinated in the country here, I'm sure there will be a different protocol being applied for those who have taken the vaccination.
Right. So do you think that the UAE could make it mandatory to be vaccinated to fly?
I can't speak on the UAE ruling, but I think it is mandatory. I think there will be easing of certain criteria for those people who can be or who are vaccinated. So rather mandating it, most likely you will see less requirement or less obstacles in the front of the passengers who have taken vaccination versus who have not taken the vaccination.
Well, we also have to ask you about the announcement that came out from Emirates yesterday, the decision to sell spare seats and offer cheaper excess baggage where you've got the capacity. Everybody talking about that yesterday. Why are you doing this?
I think today we are obviously not operating at full capacity, and we thought there was some kind of option we provided to the passengers, especially for long-haul flight, where a passenger at the check-in timing, if a seat available adjacent to him, he can purchase that seat, and he have, you know, more space around him for the economy travelers.
Are you not leaving spare seats between passengers for distancing reasons at the moment anyway?
No, at this time it's not on a planned basis, because we're still selling the seats. So we have not implemented a middle seat, as some of the airlines have announced. So, no, we are offering, but where is it possible, we space people at the time of the check-in to give more space between a passenger and others.
I mean, this is something... Edel, keep talking.
No, I was going to say, but sometimes if you are a family traveling, two or three, and they want to sit adjacent to each other, and there is another seat empty near them, so rather than that seat get filled at the last minute, or somebody comes and sits during flight, they can book that seat for them, not book it or buy that seat at the time of the check-in, to give them that comfort throughout the flight, that seat, nobody will be occupying it.
What is the break-even for one of your seats, Edel? I mean, I realise that it will vary by routes, but given what you're charging here, 200 to 600 dirhams, is it within that range?
Yeah, it will be within the IBA according to the destination and the sector. So shorter destinations will have a different price than ultra-long-haul flight. So that's where the variant of the price comes in.
But does it reflect your own break-even?
No, it is just, as I say, this is something, it's nothing to do with the break even. It is nothing to do with the actually costing of the seat, that is for sure. It is a last minute options available if the inventory at the time of the check-in be available to the passenger. So it's nothing in relation to the break even or the actual cost of the flight or the seating.
Very quickly, 30 seconds, Emirates due to release its numbers mid-April. What could we see?
I think that we would see a reduction in our overall revenues comparing to previous years, as we have been hit by the pandemic, similar to many other airlines. So we have released in the first 6 months the result, and I think this will be slightly better, but it is overall sure it comes shortfall of previous years for sure.
Edel Alreda is the COO of Emirates Airline. Thank you so much, Shukran Jazeela, for your time with us this morning, talking us through two big stories. Emirates tying up with the Dubai Health Authority to create a digital verification, a digital health passport, if you like, for travellers with their COVID information on it. And that announcement yesterday that they will be selling spare seats to travellers and offering them cheaper excess baggage.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's talk about demographics, guys. This report from S&P about the population, what do we make of this?
Oh, the funny thing is it wasn't actually a report about the population. It was a report about the real estate market, titled, Dubai's Real Estate Market Faces a Tough 2021, The Road to Recovery. I think it's not unfair to say that most people skipped the real estate bit and went straight down to the two paragraphs on population, which is what everyone was sharing and talking about yesterday. The fact that the region has seen a drop, according to S&P, this is, by the way, let's just caveat that, of around 4% in population. And the line everyone was looking at, Dubai saw the sharpest population decline in the GCC, 8.4%. Those are S&P's numbers.
We've been speaking to Shadi Shah Al-Borno about this. He's Senior Director of Group Research at Emirates MBD. And we asked him, first of all, those headline population numbers. Broadly speaking, and it's not easy to get demographic numbers in this region, but broadly speaking, we asked Shadi, is that in line with Emirates MBD's house view?
I would say that demographic data in the region as a whole is becoming much more accurate. It has very significant relevance in how we forecast, as it gives us the depth needed to look at different segments of the population, looking at things such as employment by age groups, etc. In fact, it's one of the most valuable bits of data that policymakers use to guide forward development plans that entail job creation.
If we have a look at what kind of numbers this could be, and you go through the internet and you see different population numbers around the place, but if we take a 2020, end of 2020, September 2020 population of around 3.4 million for Dubai, are we happy with that?
Yep, go with that.
We take 8.4% out of it. We are roughly looking at, and I've seen a couple of different population numbers, so we'll be a bit woolly on this one, but we are looking at between sort of 250 and 280,000 people, so around 250,000.
From Dubai is the back of the envelope calculations.
Now, we don't know where they fit in the demographic segment, which is important because that influences how much they earn and how much they spend. So we don't know if we're talking about blue collar, we don't know if we're talking about white collar, middle management, what have you. But that is, I think we could say around 250,000. Do you?
It sounds about right, yeah. I mean, that's not wildly inaccurate. It's not 2 million and it's not 5,000. Yeah, so I think you're in the right ballpark.
Back of an envelope economics. Yeah. No one is pinning this down to, you know, a percentage point.
But yeah, it feels about right. So the question is, what is the economic impact that this will have on the region in general? 4% for the region, 8% for Dubai. Here's Shadi.
Well, this impact is not a surprise. It has been factored into economic forecasts in the region. Job losses globally, regionally, as well as locally are an expected outcome from the pandemic of such a magnitude.
And we asked him finally, so what are the challenges from a data perspective of calculating demographic numbers? How important are demographics in general in making your economic estimates and forecasts at Emirates MBD?
Well, population dynamics across the region would certainly have been impacted by the pandemic, given many sectors, especially services sectors, have been adversely impacted. The question is, as the recovery takes place, how those dynamics will change. It can be fair to say that some of the outflow would be substituted by new jobs being created.
That's Shadi Al-Borno of Emirates MBD. I guess anecdotally, Tom, none of us are going to as many leaving dues as we were last summer, are we?
Yeah, but again, I think it's a little bit skewed, these numbers. I mean, it's not that surprising, really, is it? Yeah, okay, first world problem, mate loses well-paid job in construction sector, has to come to a difficult decision as to whether to stick around to look for a job or goes back home. Goes back home, has a leaving party up a solar, and then we all feel a bit, oh no, what's happening now? I mean, the fundamentals here is that your residency permit is connected to your job, and a lot of blue collar workers were made unemployed or furloughed or whatever, which meant that they couldn't hang around in this neck of the woods. They had to make way. I mean, the number of, you speak to anyone in the hospitality industry, we mentioned it yesterday about the amount of agency staff being used in a number of venues at the moment. Why? Because huge amounts of waiters, sous chefs, back of house, hospitality staff were made redundant or furloughed. They couldn't stick around in accommodation here, so they were sent back to their home countries. And then it takes a long time to get them back into the country with the paperwork that's needed, etc. So these numbers sort of make sense in the sense that, you know, this is a work environment that you are dependent on your visa, dependent on your residency. It's all linked to a job. Don't have a job, can't stay here until that opportunity arises again.
So here's the question. Does it come back? One of the things that came out of the 2008-2009 crisis globally, which sort of labour organisations pointed out, that where a lot of jobs had gone, they never came back into the economy. Where companies had figured out they could have one person doing two people's jobs, they didn't create two jobs again. And that was a problem after 2008-2009. Have we consolidated here in a way that was necessary? Or will we see, as often happens with the UAE, you see a wave, don't you? Times are tough. Lots of people get rid of. 6 months, everything's happening again. People are building. They bring them all back. It's inefficient, but it is kind of the way that the Gulf works.
And entrepôts like Singapore, Dubai, Hong Kong, you always have more extremes, don't you? People flood in, people flow out, the economy grows.
Yeah. It's great buy a Ferrari, a quarter later it's terrible, sold the dog. It's kind of how we operate.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Well, it is a busy week for the oil market. We've got two meetings for the price of one. We're cashing in our entertainer vouchers. You've got in the United States what's called CERA Week, which is arguably the biggest global gathering of the energy industry, of course, happening digitally this year. We've also got an OPEC meeting a little bit later on. So let's get some perspective on this now. Ethna Trainor joins us on the line, veteran OPEC watcher. Morning, Ethna. Good to have you with us.
Hello there, Richard. Yes, indeed it is. It's a busy week in the oil market, without a doubt. It's the Dan Yergin show over in the U.S., of course, but now they're online and they've taken it global. And the who's who of the oil industry, without a doubt, will be adding their news and views. And then, yes. What will OPEC do? The question of the week.
Well, let's start in Houston, first of all. You called it the Dan Yergin Show. This is the so-called CERA Week, which stands for Cambridge Energy Research Associates Week. 40 years ago, he founded this company in Massachusetts, in Cambridge, and created this conference, which has become kind of legendary in the industry. You've got Sultan Al Jaber of ADNOC speaking later on. You've got Amin Nasser of Saudi Aramco speaking later on in this event. You've been, I know, many, many times. Why is it such a big deal for what is the biggest industry in the Middle East?
Well, I think, Dan Yergin, which, you know, you're very familiar with, and many of the people in the oil industry will be very familiar with Dan, given his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Prize, and The New Map, which I have not read, I have to confess that, but that's very much the focus of this conference. I mean, he has grown this over the years. And without a doubt, he's seen in many circles, I suppose, as the guru of the oil and gas market and the historian, I suppose, and he's really bringing that through. But, you got all the details on CERA Week. I picked those up, too, as well. I thought you'd be interested in them. I should have known you'd be ahead of me. But it's definitely now, I think, it's a big gathering whereby people are really looking at. And if you listen and watch, as you have been doing, the narrative has changed so much, I think, in the oil and gas sector. And as I say, it doesn't really matter whether they've been bought kicking and screaming to the table. It seems like they have all arrived. And we really are looking at a new, cleaner, greener future. And everybody is doing their best to make sure they're part of that. You heard what Bernard Looney said. The brutal year, as he says, and only a man from Kerry could pronounce that with such passion.
Well, let's hear from him now. Let's hear from Bernard Looney, your countryman. He's an Irishman. He's the global CEO of BP. He's been in the job little over a year, and what a year it's been. This is what he had to say at yesterday's event.
First and foremost, it's a human tragedy, right? Lives lost and people's livelihoods destroyed, and we always have to go there first. Beyond that, you know, Dan, it was a brutal year for our sector. Fuel down 14%, aviation down 50%, negative prices at one point. You're the historian here. I'm not sure we ever seen that in our history.
So brutal year last year, but it does seem to be recovering. Brandy Scott's with you. Brandy, what's the oil price today right now? You've just been looking at it, haven't you? Brent crude?
I'll give you Brent at $62.93.
So last April, oil minus $37 a barrel. Now we're above $60 a barrel. Does that mean the kind of the war is over for the energy industry, Ethna?
Well, it's certainly been a great recovery for the energy industry. But as you say, you look at those figures and it comes from such a low base. I mean, we all remember the big highs and the big lows, but they didn't last too long. So we also have to put it in perspective and we have to put the conditions in perspective. But we are seeing, you know, such a great return. And I think it has surprised the market and it has surprised OPEC that it has returned, I think, as strong as possible. We look to see the state of the global economy. There's a recent report out from BCG that says global trade is expected to be back to pre-pandemic levels by next year. So, okay, it's still going to be a little bit of a battle. But we've seen, I think, that strength in sentiment that's out there in the market, and it certainly has helped the price. But we're also looking, you know, as Brandy gave us those figures, you know, both benchmarks are, you know, around the 60, up and down, a bit of volatility without a doubt. But they're strong. And the danger is, of course, one thing that OPEC and all of their friends will be looking at next week is, okay, maintaining strength in the market, maintaining strength in price, but making sure that the price doesn't get too high. Because as Mike Rothman, an analyst in the U.S., once said, the cure for high prices will be high prices. You know, so they're not going to want to see that happen. So they'll be very cautious as they approach this meeting.
Right. Let's talk about OPEC then. We've got a big meeting. Of course, the UAE, a key part of that. If we're being brutally honest, the reason that we're up above $60 a barrel is not because demand has suddenly surged back. It's because the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Russia and others have massively cut their production of oil over the past year or so, since March, April last year. In some ways, it's an artificial market, isn't it, with those major producers taking so much oil off the table. What can we expect at this week's meeting?
I think OPEC Plus would always, you know, maintain that they're managing the market, so to speak, because they don't want to see those prices. So even though, yes, it looks artificial perhaps to people who look at this, but this is how they work in many ways. And they move oil off the market, they put oil on the market, and it's all about really maintaining what they want to say is a balanced market. We see UAE, their production currently at the moment is about 2.6 million. I think everybody would like to be producing more oil in a price environment like now, but they also realize, you know, that the long-term impact, you know, would be detrimental. The million barrels extra that the Saudis took off, yes, everybody expecting that perhaps that might run its course. But then you have to remember it was only, I think, last week, the week before at the International Energy Forum's gathering where Prince Abdulaziz himself, you know, kind of put a caution warning out there not to, you know, overestimate the actions that they might take. And I think they're really in the big huddle right now in terms of making sure that they do something sensible, reasonable, and in many ways they might surprise the market, but how will they ease that oil back on? It's anybody's guess, and everybody is putting a guess at it in terms of will they put back a million barrels? Will the Russians actually, you know, get the go-ahead to increase production? If I knew that answer, yeah, you and I probably wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation.
we'd be billionaire oil traders, wouldn't we? Ethna, let's forget about oil. Let's talk about renewable energy. This is Bernard Looney. He wants to make BP, British Petroleum, a net carbon neutral company by 2050. Seems extraordinary for an oil producing company. This is what Bernard Looney had to say about that.
We're going to diversify the company and we're going to decarbonize the company over the course of the next decade. We're going to have a 20-fold increase in renewable power generation. We entered offshore wind in the United States and now in the UK. We grew in solar. And after growing our hydrocarbons business in the first half of this decade, we'll see it reduced by about 40% by 2030. And all of that will lead to our emissions, our absolute emissions, coming down by between 30 and 40%.
30 seconds, Ethna. How worrying is this pivot to renewables for major oil-producing countries like the UAE and Saudi Arabia?
I think everybody is warning, and I think it's very clear that this transition is not going to be a short one. This might be a long one. We look at productions up until even 2040. We're still expecting, you know, yes, a decrease in oil production. The demand will be there, but the demand will still be there. We need oil and gas at the moment to facilitate and to finance the transition. But without a doubt, that's where we're heading. You hear the narrative is very, very different. And I think for the time being, it's this question on investment. Can they actually do the dual highway, so to speak, and keep investment to keep the lights on for now and at the same time make sure that there's plenty of investment for renewables and the cleaner, greener future they all want.
Ethna, great talk to you. Appreciate that. Busy week for the oil market. CERAWeek happening in Houston. OPEC meeting happening a little bit later on. That is Ethna Trainor joining us on the line. You're listening to The Business Breakfast, Dubai Eye 103.8.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.